Excuse me. Okay, so welcome to the month six investability tour briefing that covers the trading period, obviously from the 1st of June to the 30th of June. As the briefing document explains, exchange traded receivables are leases, monetary obligations, or bills issued under contract for assets, goods, and services that are supplied to investment quality companies, are credit insured invoices from investment grade insurers. What this means is that an ETR is evidence of a debt owing from one company to another. Typically, these tend to be large companies or banks that are household names, and they owe money to their smaller micro to medium sized suppliers. We call these micro to medium sized supplier businesses originators, because they originate the debt obligation transactions that creates the ETR that are traded on the exchange. So the ETR is evidence of the large company's liability to pay the smaller one, and credit exchange buy these ETR at a nominal discount to their face value. In doing so, when the ETR are settled or are paid in full, the difference between the face value that it settled at and the discounted price that it was purchased at creates a margin, and it is this margin that creates the yield or return for your investors. Credit exchange also provides other credit facilities to other types of transactions, such as trade finance, asset finance, and others. And essentially, they all work on the same principles that the traded ETR is a business transaction. The exchange provides liquidity and is paid a commission for doing so, much in the same way a bank charges interest. And pretty much at every briefing I've given over the past couple of years, I start with the above introduction. However, it seems it isn't clear to everyone what I've actually said or what this means. For example, at last month's briefing, I was asked why AIB Bank or Laois County Council would be coming to credit looking for finance. So for that reason, at this briefing, I'm going to explain this a little further by giving you a couple of examples. If you look at the center of the briefing for this month, you'll see a list of the top 10 largest investable holdings, Balfour Beatty, Tarmac, and so on. So as with AIB and Laois County Council last month, one could ask, why would a company like Nestlé be borrowing money from credit? Or indeed, why would the HSE be in need of finance for credit? And the answer is they are not. It is the companies that supply Nestlé or the HSE that are using credit to finance their business. For the purpose of this example, let's say there's a micro to medium-sized business that supplies computer services to both Nestlé and the HSE. Both of these are great customers to have, but the issue for this originator business is that the more that they supply to Nestlé or to the HSE, the more business that they originate and ultimately end up invoicing Nestlé and the HSE, and it's that invoice that we call an exchange traded receivable or an ETR. Every time they issue an invoice to Nestlé or the HSE for the services that they provide, it can take 6 If the business is fast growing, the more business it conducts with these two companies, the more credit they have to offer them, or the more finance they need to cash flow their business while they wait to get paid. That's why they applying more services to Nestlé and the HSE, they need more and more cash to run their business while they're waiting to get paid. Once the originator is approved by the trade desk and authorized by the credit team, they're allowed to sell. Issue each new invoice, they upload it to the credit exchange system, and we buy them by paying an average of 80% of the face value of the invoice on the day that they issue it. And we buy it on an exchange receivable or ETR. And in buying it, Even though we only paid 80% of its face value, we are the 100% owner of it. So let's say one of the invoices to Nestlé has a total face value of 10,000 euro. And in this example, we will have paid 8,000 euro to purchase it. As part of the trade desk approval and the credit team authorization process, Nestlé will have agreed to change the payee bank details from the originator's bank details to the bank details for the main clearing account at the credit account bank. While credit waits 60 days for the 10,000 euro to be paid, the originator is happy to take the 8,000 payment on the day they issued their invoice, and they too wait for another 60 days before they get the balance of the other 20%, less whatever fees and commissions we charge them. At the same time, as I said, credit now owns 100% of an asset worth 10,000 euro that we only paid 8,000 euro for. And it is this 20% that we call the reserve on that ETR. And the reserve does several things for credit exchange. Firstly, it acts as a strong incentive for the originator to properly manage their credit control to make sure Nestlé pay the invoice on day 60, because the originator still wants to receive the remaining 20% still owed to them. Secondly, it provides a very good protection against Nestlé never paying the invoice at all. So Nestlé, as we know, is a strong covenant for any originator to hold, and the likelihood of them not paying their invoices when they fall due is highly unlikely. However, there are instances where, for example, maybe the service the originator was contracted to deliver wasn't delivered properly, and Nestlé simply declined to pay. In this instance, credit has paid out 8,000 euro for the ETR, but Nestlé are never going to pay the 10,000 euro when it falls due. But that's the beauty of the reserves in the first place, because credit has a 20% reserve not only on that invoice, but on every invoice that originator has sold to us. Not only all the other invoices issued to Nestlé, but also the ones issued to the HSE and any other debtors they are trading with us. So at any moment in time, we could have 10, 20, or 50 or more ETR we own, and therefore we have 10 or 50 other ETR that we have purchased, but have only paid 80% of their face value. Because that is the case, to make up the loss of the 10,000 euro from the Nestlé invoice not settling, we simply keep the reserves from these other ETR until the 8,000 is paid in full. And lastly, having all of these invoices on our books, because we bought them and therefore we own them, we then charge a nominal fee on each invoice when it settles. Let's say in this example, we take 1%. So in the other invoices, and we'll assume that these other invoices, for the simplicity of the description, these other 10,000 euro invoices from Nestlé and HSE settle, we will only pass 1,900 to the originator and keep the 100 euro for providing the finance service to the originator. And it is that same 100 euro that we will use to operate our business and, more importantly, to pay a yield or interest to your investors. So I thought it was important that I just go through that in a bit more detail based on the questions that were asked at the last briefing. Before returning to the briefing itself, it's probably worthwhile pointing out the importance of the trade desk and the systems they use to trade these invoices, or ETR as we call them. We trade them in their hundreds and thousands every working day of every week in the year. As you saw earlier, the trade desk must always be sure that they have adequate reserves held on every originator's account to protect credit and its investors from distressed or delinquent invoices, or ETR. Because credit has thousands of ETR being traded and waiting for payment at any moment in time, the trade desk really has to be on their A game in order that they don't expose credit to any unnecessary risk. If you look to our 2021 accounts, we hold in excess of 14 million in reserves. And these reserves are ultimately how we protect your investors from any losses of their funds. The trade desk brings all their training, experience, and management skills in combination with the trading systems we've developed over the past 10 years. And as you probably know, we're well advanced in completing the delivery of our new trading system later this year. Before leaving the issue of reserves, we've also been paying AIG for the past 10 years to provide us with outlier event coverage, as we call it. So if you look at the investable brochure, AIG are providing the fourth level in our four-tier capital protection. On Thursday's board meeting, we'll be discussing the discontinuation of this insurance coverage. The primary reason is because we built up large enough reserves of our own that we believe we are possibly wasting money continuing to pay the $2 million or more that we've paid to AIG to date, particularly in the last 10 years when we've only made one claim for $60,000. And it would be interesting to have anybody's views or comments. Either now or at the end of the briefing. Okay, so let's discuss it at the end. Just to say that whatever happens or whatever the decision is, it'll have no effect for the next 12 months. July 2023. So we're merely floating the idea at this briefing to test the waters, if you like. Going back to our system that I mentioned a moment ago, the new system is called the Credit Machine, and this will assist automating some of the more manual tasks that trade desk personnel have to carry out each day. When the Credit Machine goes into full production, it'll continue the practice of buying debtor ETR like the HSE and Nestle. And also pay the originator suppliers, finance orders before they're invoiced, and indeed finance the purchase of assets using our leasable ETR product. When you put the whole lot of this together, what Credit have designed in terms of financial products and then built in terms of the Credit Machine technical trading systems means that Credit is often the preferred form of finance for many companies rather than using bank credit at all. Hopefully this explains a little bit better what we actually do here and provides you with the knowledge and comfort you need to continue promoting investable to your clients as an alternative to bank deposits. Lastly, in relation to investors, be they retail investors like your clients or institutional investors that we have been engaging with over the last number of months, everything that we trade is in accordance with the mandate set down by the Credit team, who ultimately report to the Board of Credit Exchange. In fact, most fund managers will admit they cannot deploy and manage their funds as efficiently as a company like Credit Exchange. The level of detail we go into while still managing large volumes of transactions cannot be replicated by fund managers. As long as we stick rigidly to our mandates, they're very supportive of and indeed keen to invest in the ETR that we trade. In this regard, you may recall from last month's briefing, I mentioned that although the active RSA and allocation figures remain constant, the value of trade increased by more than 40%, which means we're putting more money to work without changing how we manage it or the mandates that we follow. Maintaining solid underlying figures means we're using our funds efficiently and continue to grow more trade at the same time. Which leads me into this month's briefing, where, as the document states, at the end of June, Credit Exchange held active RSA of 79.74 million, which is an increase of almost 12% on last month's figures. As you may know, RSA stands for Revolving Sale Agreement, and a revolving sale agreement is a document or contract between the micro to medium-sized business, the originator, and Credit Exchange. The revolving sale agreement is a commitment by that originator to sell a certain value of ETR to the exchange in any given period. Typically, it's normally for 1 year, for example. So let's say an originator needs a trade facility a trade revolving facility, I should say, of $1 million in order to run their business. They will come to the credit group, much like they would a bank, and apply for that credit facility of €1 million on a revolving basis, let's say every 60 days. This means that they are agreeing to sell to us $1 million worth of ETR every 60 days, and therefore the revolving sale agreement, or RSA, will be for a total of $6 million worth of ETR over the next 12-month period. This commitment to sell the $6 million of ETR annually to Credit Exchange is documented in the RSA, revolving sale agreement, with the credit group. Similarly, if we are looking at a leasing transaction where the originator wanted to buy an asset for, let's say, $5 million over 5 years, this would result in total payments over 60 months of approximately $6 million, meaning that each month for 60 months, the originator would pay credit €10,000 per month. Each one of these payments is an ETR, and collectively the total $6 million is part of the active revolving sale agreements we report on at these briefings each month. So these active RSA contracts continue to remain short as trading patterns and the speed of settlement continues to keep the cash-to-cash life cycles short, with the ever-increasing use of trade and shipping costs or freight finance. Trade finance in its purest form, meaning that we support mining-related projects, commodity trades, and shipping-related transactions as the core competency and principal activity on the trade desk. The next figure in the briefing states that there was 67.1 million of investor funds that were fully allocated. As you know, this means that we have just over 67 million of investors' funds in the market. When you add to that the 79, almost 80 million of RSA or revolving sale agreements that represent future orders that we have not yet filled, this amounts to over 145 million in trade that we have on our books at the end of June. For 2022, and overall, this figure has continued to rise each month and shows strong and stable growth as we put more money to work in the market. Moving to investor redemptions or withdrawals, it dropped slightly to 1.34 million. And as stated last month, there is now a familiar pattern of peaks and troughs in receipts and withdrawals from investors, and is one of the reasons why we are raising additional debt to support our expansion in the markets that we've chosen to focus on. Looking to the Baltic Index, which is the index against which most shipping contracts are linked, the index continues to have a turbulent and generally upward-looking year so far. It started the year at having spiked at 33.57 towards the end of May. Last month, I said it's unlikely we'll see the volatility and record-breaking levels like the 5,500 we saw in September of last year. To read the movement in that particular index. Are we going to repeat the halcyon days of 2004 or 2006? Your guess is as good as mine. However, there are some issues that are most likely to push that index higher. The principal one being inflation, which we covered last month in some detail, and we'll be commenting on it a little bit further. No doubt. The second is the supply and demand dynamics in the global commodities markets. And then finally, the EEX slow steaming legislation that comes into effect in January. Talking about the commodities first, the war in the Ukraine has definitely impacted shipping lanes and practices around the Black Sea. And certainly commodity prices have been affected too. For example, the Chicago wheat futures market stood at an all-time high of $1,277 per bushel earlier in the year, and today it's trading at $7.59. That's an almost 40% drop in the price of wheat in just over 2 months. There are several reasons for the drop, one being that Russia and the Ukraine signed an agreement to resume grain exports from Ukraine, from the Ukraine ports in the Black Sea, and the second being that the US announced that grains and fertilizers from Russia will not be sanctioned. These are two important observations, because whether it is a case of war and sanctions or inflation and supply chain issues, commodities continue to be traded, and governments, largely led by the US, will find a way to keep these commodities moving. Of course, no sooner has Erdogan got signatures from Ukraine and Russia on the agreement from last week than Russia go ahead and bomb Odessa anyway. This hasn't affected the bushel price, and it mirrors my belief that the bombing was more of a finger in the eye than a signal that the agreement is worthless. Either way, this agreement is good news for the grain market, but who'd like to be holding future contracts above 1,200 that have dropped to 800 today? Well, obviously no one, unless they're short in the market. And what does that have to do with credit anyway? Well, in the past, we have financed grain trades out of Ukraine. However, in doing so, we are not exposed to the volatility in the futures market. If we are, we won't trade it. In the instance that I'm referring to, we agreed to provide the finance to buy the grain at a certain price, where the offtake price is contractually bound and backed by a letter of credit. The letter of credit has to be from a reputable bank approved by the trade desk, where the buy and sell prices are fixed, regardless of what happens in the day-to-day or in the futures market. Currently, we're looking at some contracts for timber logs from Argentina to India, where again, the prices we're looking at for some of the timber logs, the prices are fixed. Payment is by Citigroup letter of credit. And the only reason we haven't agreed the trade yet is because the deal desk are still conducting due diligence on the originator. We've been in discussions with them for over a year on other trades, but until we're satisfied with every aspect of the trade, we can't commit, or more correctly, the trade desk won't commit. Moving to the second reason why we believe there will be an increasing demand in shipping that will keep the Baltic Index strong for the next 18 to maybe 24 months is the Energy Efficiency Existing Ship Index, or the EEXI. This index was introduced by the International Maritime Organization, the IMO, to reduce the greenhouse gas emission of ships. Starting on January the 1st of next year, 2023, practically all existing ships must fall below a certain limit of CO2 emissions per cargo capacity, and of the total global fleet of ships, that's according to shipbroking firm Simpson Spence Young, it estimates that less than 25% of all the bulkers and tankers in the world comply with this legislation. So the effect that this will have on the remaining 75% of ships is that they will have to spend millions of dollars in modifying their ships' engines to comply with the EEX regulations, or they simply have to reduce the speed at which they steam, meaning they have to move slower in order to consume less fuel and exude less CO2 emissions. It doesn't take a genius to figure out that if the already depleted world fleet has to slow down by an average of 15%, the cargoes they carry are going to take longer to deliver and cost more to do so. There may be savings in bunker or fuel consumption, but the daily charter rates will be extended, and the demand for shipping will force this price to remain high for the foreseeable future. Meaning, until more ships are added to the world fleet, the existing fleet should enjoy higher pricing, as I said, for the next 18, possibly 24 months. How is that figure derived? Well, if you consider that it takes an average of 2.5 years to build these ships, that is the basis for the opinion that we've got another 18 months or more where the market should remain strong, regardless of other factors like inflation, et cetera, might have. Moving to the FFA markets, this confirms our belief in that it's currently holding at around the 20,000 mark, certainly until the end of this year and into quarter one of 2023. The FFA markets are the derivative financial futures that predict cargo transport prices ahead of time. And when you combine these with the Baltic Index together, they provide a pretty good indication of how the market's most likely to behave. The Panamax 4TC FFA rates were 20,000 in January. They rose to 26 and 20. Today, display signs that the shipping industry is going to remain strong for 2022 and most likely 2023. At these levels, even at 20,000, means originators still require finance. It looks like as a result. Looking further out past the 12 months from now into mid 2023 and beyond, the rates currently show a significant drop heading on into 2024, but as stated at prior briefly, than the shorter trades where the FFAs have been used as practical tools for hedging against an increase in charter rates in the short to mid-term. These are used by actual freight and shipping companies rather longer FFA positions may look poor now. They've pretty much looked poor for the last couple of years. So we don't pay much attention to them once they go out past 12 months. Quickly looking at the research from Seaborne, from their weekly shipping research reports, they summarize important events that they believe will impact markets. And they repeated our own observations on the agreement reached between the Ukraine and Russia, stating that the Russian-occupied Berdyansk port on the Black Sea has been demined and is ready to resume grain shipments. Their briefing came out before the Russians decided to bomb Odessa, but I do believe that was a, as I call it, finger in the eye to the Ukrainians. Anyway, as this briefing is about June's trade, the dip in trading results back in April was repeated again in June, where trading dropped from 1564 in May to 12.73 million in June. This is the second time this year we've seen a drop. This one is of about 20%. And so there's a second dip in trading. As you'll see from the performance section, however, we continue our year-on-year improvements and remains a healthy 30% higher than what we traded back in June of 2021. Looking at Treasury's performance, as you'd expect, it lags behind at 9.01 million. And it does this because its performance peaks from increased trading in the previous 70 to 80 days. Speaking of which, and moving to the ETR average duration figure of 79 days, this is the third time in 2 years where we have seen it in the 70s. For 2022, quarter two, it's held steady in this 70 to 80 range and therefore appears to have stabilized. From prior briefings, a stable credit index allows for better planning and management by the trade desk. As you all know, the credit index is the ETR average duration or the number of days it takes for an ETR to get settled. So the credit index is the cash-to-cash cycle from the day an ETR is issued and purchased in cash and the number of days it takes for the debt to be extinguished or settled and the cash to be returned. So the credit index is one of our economic indicators that we use in our market, the one that we're trading, and appears to be back to normal. And hopefully it continues to remain stable. Moving to the center of the document, this is where we list the 10 largest investable ETR holdings and the top 10 rated holdings. These two lists show what companies or organization owed the exchange the largest amounts of money as at the 30th of June. And as usual, we can see the HSE remains an all but constant. Then we have Nestlé remaining, as it has for the past 3 months, and a repeat of Balfour Beatty, with Tarmac making its debut appearance as one of our four aggregate companies that are listed in June. They being Balfour Beatty, Hogan Aggregates, Aggregate Industries, and of course Tarmac. Moving to the top 10 rated investable ETR on the right-hand side, there's the regular appearance of Transport Supplies, Nestlé, and others. These are the highest rated debtors, and apart from Nestlé, as none of these have an investment grade or an investment grade rating on the 30th of June, the list is a selection of these organizations, regardless of the amount of their liability. It's a simple selection of the most creditworthy. The pie chart below these shows a well-diversified spread of ETR across the market. Health and Community continues to hover between 16 and 19 during this year and came in at just over 19 in June. Wholesale and retail had held steady at 25 to 26%, with food and beverage down 1 point, just below 7%. Manufacturing remains firm at 9.57, as it has for the last number of months. And construction dropped back by 3 points to 16.52, but overall looks stable because of the mining and infrastructure trades we support for projects in the UK, like the HS2 or High Speed 2 rail link from Birmingham to London. Looking at the performance section of this briefing document, you'll see a continuing pattern in the trade for June 21 versus June 2022, where volumes are as much as 40% lower year on year, but the values continue to be up. This means that our ETR are now coming in consistently higher in value than they were a year ago, which kind of makes sense when you consider who our debtors are and the industry sectors that we're focusing on. We traded just over 58 million in 2021, and as you can see, we traded almost another 20 million, or a total of almost 76.22 million to the end of June 2022. The credit index of 79 is repeated again, and to finish on our performance in June, the largest single trade was a finance deal of just over 2.3 million that financed the delivery of aggregate materials to one of the UK's large infrastructure projects. As explained in the investable brochure and also at other briefings, the average value of an ETR is about €2,000, but we have traded where the value. Last month, the largest one. Moving to the trend section of the June briefing, you can see that the investor's yield or buy price during June started at 2.106 and ended down at 2.084. Basis point drop, spike down mid-month to 2.055, but pretty much just like May, the 2.1 position held stable for the month. As you know, supply has been increasing all of this year. For those that don't already know, on the 13th of July, we pushed the rate to 3.750 to try and match the supply with the demand. It'll take some time for this to but as you know, we're also in the debt markets, raising institutional funds to assist in growing our market. As always, and to remind you, with a negative yield of 1%, or if the ECB move in the coming days, zero yield on bank deposits, the investors are now being offered a yield that is between 3.75 and even 4.75 better by buying investable exchange traded receivables than leaving their cash languish unattended in the bank. As you know, this rate changes daily and can be checked anytime on the investable website. To finish the briefing, you will see a repeat of the active RSA, or revolving sale agreements of €79.74. And that concludes this month's briefing for June 2022. Thank you very much.